It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Weekly crop reports are back up and running from the National Agricultural Statistics Service.
With the growing season on the horizon, soil health is top of mind for Wisconsin farmers. And today we're digging into agricultural sustainability with a look at two soil health projects in western Wisconsin.
In-ground probes across Vernon County farms are tracking soil temperature and moisture as we speak. But first, we're headed to Grant County in southwestern Wisconsin, where a new farmer-led learning center is taking soil care practices to a new level. Joining us now from Fields of Cincinnati is soil advisor Rick Bieber. Rick, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
Before we get into the soil, I want to hear about the fields. The Fields of Cincinnati, a very unique history, a unique landscape here. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
The history behind it, it's the convent of the Dominican Sisters have a landscape there of not quite 500 acres that the Dominican Sisters have always been known for their teachings or helping educate the world. That community is going down in population. So the wisdom of the remaining sisters have been that they would like their legacy to still be in teaching, but they're asking the landscape to be the classroom now. So they've asked the Fields of Cincinnati if we could make that into a demonstration farm that would be demonstrating the pillars of soil care that are known in the regenerative world as bringing things back to soil health.
What brought you in as soil advisor to the Fields of Cincinnati? What made you want to make that trek to southwestern Wisconsin?
I'm from northern South Dakota. I retired off my farm there, and a lot of these practices that are known in regenerative agriculture, we've been doing on our farm there in South Dakota for 30, 35 years already. So we have a lot of experience with that. But what drew me to the Fields of Cincinnati is Dave Brandt was kind of the godfather of regenerative agriculture, so to speak. And it was somewhat his idea or his dream to have a training center of some sort. And Dave was a good friend of mine, along with a lot of other good friends that Dave got together and decided they wanted to start this farmer-led, farmer-implemented, and farmer-advised learning center. So what brought me here was their unique topography. The landscape lies with the elevation of the mound, they call it. It's elevation rise of about 300 feet compared to the lower elevation, and it's covered with trees. So we have a bit of forest we look at. But coming off that, we have our watersheds coming off there. And the Fields of Cincinnati, the Dominican Sisters, have three distinct watersheds in varying lengths, but a couple of them have quite a length to them, where we can actually monitor the water from when God gives it to us until it leaves our landscape. And many research farms around the world do not have that. They have to deal with somebody else's watershed. So that was one of the things that drew me, is that we can monitor the water and we can go ahead and start using our soil care practices to see once if we can't draw more carbon into the soil. And the higher the carbon levels go, the better the water quality should get.
Let's dig into that soil now. Rick, you're doing a lot of measuring and testing and things like that. The lesson I'm taking here is soil is more complicated than I would think to look at it. What's going on in it?
Well, I don't know if it's so complicated, Rob. I think it's complex. And there is a difference there. Complex is a bunch of systems that are put together. And if we look at the systems as a system holistically, we can figure out what makes our water purer, what makes our food better, and all these things. So what we're trying to do here, and we actually just started a program that's quite unique to our organization as far as nobody else around the world is really doing this, is we're benchmarking all of the nutrients in the soil that are inherent to the properties of the soil. So we're measuring the total carbons and the total nitrogens and total phosphorus and all of the 18 essential nutrients for life. We're measuring them in the soils and monitoring also. But along with that, we're measuring the life in the soils to find out where the communities are at, to see if the balances are there, because every community has to have a balance for it to function properly and for life to sustain itself without a lot of excess inputs.
On a practical level, what does that process look like? What are you doing in the ground? How often are you testing? How wide an area are you covering?
Well, we've reached out, the Field of Sense now has reached out to the watersheds of Wisconsin. There's about 50 organized watersheds, and we've reached out to all them and asked if they want to join in our program so that they can find the soils that are in their watershed rather than us trying to pick when we don't know their watersheds. So they get to pick what soils they want to use, what farmers they want to use, and then they'll do a total nutrient digestion test. They'll do a PLFA, that's a phospholipid fatty acid test. That tells us what the differentiations are in the soil. And then in the regenerative world, there's a test called the Haney soil test or soil health test. And we're doing that one also. And that one there, the farmers can use immediately to figure out where their nutrient needs are for this year's crop. And the other ones are more benchmarking to see once how the practices of the farm or the landscape, either the previous practices or practices going forward, can affect the total nutrients and or the biological communities.
Doing these things, I understand, can help soil health, can protect water quality. If a farmer is taking these measurements and then taking them into account as they plant and fertilize and things like that, is that something that's going to help them with things like input costs?
We would hope so. We've seen this in many places throughout the world where once all these communities are balanced, the nutritional needs from the outside nutrition, whether it be additional manure or whether it be synthetic inputs of some sort, those can either be lowered and or reduced. We have to understand that we have been farming our land in a style for many, many decades already, if not centuries, that have been a bit disruptive to the community below the soil. But as we repair that community or allow that community to repair itself, which it does, it's a self-governing system down there. If we allow that to happen, now the dependence upon outside resources to grow the crop diminishes drastically.
What kind of farming techniques can break some of those cycles you were talking about and help preserve soil quality for the long run?
There's five that are pretty much recognized throughout agriculture, and one of them is soil armor, just having something on the soil surface. It can be a living plant, or it can be the residue from the previous plants of whatever they are. And what that does is protect the soil from the intensity of the sunlight, because the sunlight can cause spikes in temperature and dives in temperature at night. And we don't want to have that happen to the extremes that it does in today's agriculture. Another pillar is to have living diversity out there at all times, more than just one plant or one system of roots there. Today's farmers, and I was one of them, that would plant a wheat and then it would be just wheat, or it'd just be corn or soybeans or sunflowers or whatever you do, wherever you farm around the world. And that particular plant only is alive for 3 months or 5 months, or maybe it's 8 months or something like that. But the biological creatures below ground have to live off a carbon molecule whenever they want to move their food sources, carbon molecule. And if it's not being sequestered from the atmosphere through a plant into the soil, now it has to be eaten out of basically the soil's pantry or the soil's freezer, wherever you store your food. And in the soil, that carbon molecule is stored in organic matter. So now that living creature goes to the soil's pantry, the organic matter, and consumes the carbon out of it. So now we have reduced organic matter in our soils.
And finally, Rick, what are you hoping farmers in Southwest Wisconsin, of course, Iowa, Minnesota, and elsewhere, take away from the work you're doing there?
We like farmers. We like everybody. All are welcome to come and see what's going on. Even if you have nothing to do with agriculture, we all eat food. And we have to look at our agricultural systems as food production systems. So we'd like all to come. And when we have people come, we would like them to walk out there and look at it, go, this is very interesting. We would like them to say to themselves, I wonder how they did that. And if you choose to know more, you're welcome to get a hold of us. You can Google Fields of Cincinnati. We're on a website. It's quite current. You can get a hold of us. We'll give you a tour. You can come to our field days. Or if you just want to self-learn, just come, bring your shovel, put it in the soil, tip it over, listen to the soils, smell the soils, feel the soils. It's amazing what happens to the face of the earth when all these things take place, because the soils become soft like a carpet.
Rick, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Rob. I very much appreciate the opportunity to talk about the Fields of Cincinnati.
That was Rick Bieber with the Fields of Cincinnati in Grant County. The Farmer-Led Learning Center has a new soil research project focusing on agricultural sustainability. Now we're turning to soil research in Vernon County, where we find Samir Karbush. He's the watershed planner for Vernon County Land and Water. Samir, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for your time.
And now your latest soil project, this partnership with the Bad Axe Watershed Stewards, that's a local watershed council. How did this research come about?
Yeah, so as a watershed planner, I work closely with the producer-led watershed groups in our county. I work with them as a liaison between our department, and they had some grant money that they wanted to spend on technology. They had asked me to do some research to try to figure out some good technology for them to use this money for. They ended up moving forward with these soil probes that measure moisture and temperature at three different depths along the probe. We have these spaced out around the watershed, the Bad Axe watershed, at different farmers' places. They're in various conservation practices and different sorts of tillage and different sorts of cover crops. So the goal is to measure these differences. This year, we will be having some test plots on a farmer's land that will have different cover crops within his corn. So we'll be able to see how these cover crops affect moisture and infiltration of water.
Now, Samir, these soil probes, paint us a picture for somebody who hasn't worked with a soil probe, which I think is most of us. What do they look like?
Right. So it's just a kind of a, I don't know, I'd say inch and a half tube. It's 12 inches long, and it measures the moisture and temperature of three different sections along that probe. And it's completely self-contained. It's run off of a AA battery that lasts about 2 years. And I walk up to it with my phone. It's completely buried, and the Bluetooth picks it up, and I can download the data. We're taking a sample every 3 hours.
What is the value of having this kind of three hour by three hour information about our,
right,
our temperature and our moisture in the soil?
Right. So I guess, you know, after a rainfall event, it's nice to see how quickly the water is infiltrating, see if it is infiltrating. Different types of tillage, different types of cover crops, they will affect how quickly water will infiltrate into your soil and the temperature. And even one of our farmers is planting his corn in two different directions, you know, east to west and north to south, and that affects the temperature of the soil significantly. So this different data can help the farmer determine which way he would like to proceed in the future.
What kind of things can we learn, can we figure out about how to keep that soil on the land and not washing away into the water and the watershed you're protecting?
Yeah, as you mentioned, that's a big concern. Phosphorus and everything else travels into the water that way and down to the Gulf of Mexico and the Gulf of America. We should be keeping permanent cover on the land whenever possible. You know, a lot of times farmers are done, they're harvesting their corn and beans and whatever else, and they don't plant any cover crops. There's a lot of time where the ground is just exposed to the environment. And as we're having larger rain events, that's more important to keep cover crops on the ground, stuff like that, less minimal tillage.
And with that information in hand, what kind of practical changes can farmers in Vernon County make?
Yeah, so farming on the contour is a big one, and that would be, you know, farming perpendicular to the slope, and that means a big deal around here with the topography that we have in Vernon County. A lot of our fields are extremely steep near streams and stuff, and the fields aren't super big. So farming on the contour, cover crops, our department has money to fund that. We have dams. We're putting small farm ponds in on the edge of field boundaries in people's farm fields, and that's like a sediment control basin. They're not, you know, as effective as some of the bigger ones we have, but a lot of these small ones would be ineffective.
Are you getting a lot of buy-in from farmers in the community who want to participate in these practices to preserve their soil?
We are getting a lot of buy-in from farmers, and our goal is to, you know, get more and more every year. These watershed groups, these producer-led organizations are very helpful for spreading the word and getting information out to these farmers and giving them a chance to collaborate, you know, with other farmers and with agencies that are willing to support them, whether that's, you know, the Land and Water County, DNR, NRCS. There's all sorts of agencies that come together at these meetings, and it's very instrumental in spreading the good word and getting out what we need to.
You mentioned heavy rainfall events, and we can think of a handful in your neck of the woods over the last decade or two. Is that starting to change the way people think about preserving the watershed, preserving soil, avoiding the damage of flooding?
Yes, I think the, you know, the floods of 2018, 2017, that time really, you know, struck a chord with a lot of people. And that is what everybody thinks about trying to prevent. I mean, there was insane washing through people's fields, you know, much infrastructure, bridges and other things were compromised, people's structures. You know, as we receive these larger rain events, I think people are more concerned with trying to keep the water on their land and keep it from reaching the streams and causing all this destruction that it can.
Well, that makes me wonder, is there a line from, you know, taking care of our soil better to flood prevention? Or am I overstating? Am I connecting dots that can't be directly connected?
No. Like I said, keeping the water on your land and making sure it's infiltrating as opposed to running off and then reaching the streams and causing these flooding issues is a great method of controlling that. I mean, if we're keeping cover crops and keeping land cover, a lot more of that water will infiltrate. The roots are, you know, making the soil more able to accept moisture. So it's a big difference when we're implementing these conservation practices on the landscape. That's instrumental in preventing these floods and keeping the water on the land.
Are you kind of always looking for more people, farmers and other community members, to get involved in their local watershed groups?
Oh, yes. Always looking for people. You don't necessarily have to own a bunch of land or be a big farmer. We collaborate with all sorts of different community members that assist us in the work that they're doing. So we've got somebody, you know, developing a website for us that's just a local member. So there's all sorts of ways to get involved.
So working with all these watershed groups, Samer, what are your top goals, top priorities over the course of this year?
Yes. So my top goals would probably be to get more and more people involved in these groups. I've been working to get farmers who aren't currently involved in the group, maybe larger players in the game as far as having more acres. So getting those people involved would have a greater effect on the work we're doing. We're working on some grazing grants to get experienced grazers. We're trying to work with them to promote grazing without necessarily making them sign a contract, but just a great mentorship opportunity for a grazer who has questions about their operation to work with the grazing specialist. That's one operation we're working on. And we're also working on grassland birds and helping people understand what types of the bird species use their pastures and how they can change their management too.
Samer, thanks for sharing your work with us. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Samer Carbush, watershed planner for Vernon County Land and Water, talking about soil research happening on farms throughout the county. Earlier, we heard about a new soil carbon project with Rick Bieber with the Fields of Cincinnati in Grant County.